what was it really like to grow up with the British invasion, the second British invasion, through the progressive movement, and into the icons like Elton John and Bruce Springsteen, as music progressed from its infancy to where we are today? What was it like to experience a rock concert in the 70s that defined an entire generation? What was it like to build our first stereo system, to listen to this great new music, components that were designed to last a lifetime? I know, I still have mine. I still use it. We learned how to transfer our music from home to our cars. The advent of cassette tape and 8-track. I was there. I experienced it all. Through the decades, the music, yes, has changed. The technology, yes, has changed dramatically. How do we, as boomers, deal with the rapid change of technology when back in the day, things moved at a snail's pace and it was easier to adapt? I was there. I am there. I experienced it all. What was it like to experience Woodstock, Cal Jam, Us Festival, Live Aid? I was there. I've seen it all. Join me, Brad Blue, as I give my perspective.
As well as me, Alec, his son and the voice in the newer generations.
On all these wonderful events that we grew up with as boomers on Full Circle Analog. Most of us would agree that the concert experience of the 70s was an amazing place to be. We grew up with the British invasion and the second British invasion. The second British invasion brought along with it advances in sound systems, lighting, that was eclipsed even later in the 80s. But this past weekend, Mother's Day, and we hope all you mothers out there, and of course all you mothers out there, had a wonderful time. This past Mother's Day, we had the reopening of our city a little bit. We had their canceled last year, open for this year. It was not really social distancing, but our Arts and Music Festival was Friday night and all day Saturday. You could just tell people were chomping at the bit to get outdoors. It was a very festive atmosphere. There were lots of people there. Ran into a lot of friends. And because of COVID, the lineup was a little subdued. It has tended to be some rock and roll has-beens, 80s bands has-beens, maybe even some 70s, you know, what's left of these bands, bins. But a lot of cover bands. Femme Halen was one of the headliners of these cover bands. They were scheduled to come on at 6 o'clock on Friday night. My wife and I were strolling around the food park, and about 5:20, suddenly we heard this blast from a guitar. And turned around, and we were across the street from what is known as our Performing Arts Center from our little town, and is known as YPAC. And it was of course, it's an all-girl band. It's Femme Halen imitating Van Halen. And the guitar player was doing a sound check on her guitar. And all I could see from, you know, 250 yards away was this bright pink metallic looking guitar, left-handed. But the reason I'm talking about this is the sound system was so loud that I don't remember hearing amps on a rock and roll stage that loud since I can't remember. Probably the 70s. I think there were two things when we went into concerts in the 1970s, when rock and roll touring and the 70s bands were rising up in fame and would support
their albums that they released with a tour, and the U.S. was usually the first stop. There were a couple things that were quite obvious when you first went into your very first concerts, and then you learned to expect it. And one of those was, of course, the strong smell of marijuana, which was pretty outrageous that even then they could let you smoke in the open. But the thing that was even just as amazing was how loud the concerts were. I remember telling my parents when I'd come home from a concert, they didn't really care, but they'd ask me. They were just glad I got there and back safely. Where I lived, it was a good hour drive across town through. I lived in southeastern Los Angeles County and had to drive over to the Forum on the west side of town, or I had to go to Long Beach, to the Long Beach Arena, which was a drive in itself, a different direction of a drive, but quite a long drive. But I remember telling my parents, you know, one thing you probably don't want to hear this, but one thing that is shocking about going to concerts, talking to my parents, I go, is how loud the sound systems are. You think the music I play on my stereo in my room is loud? Rock concerts are 10 times that. I can remember some of the early concerts I went to. I never covered my ears, but it was shocking how loud it was. Of course, you know, it was even louder when they were, you know, the roadies were setting up for the opening act, and, you know, usually the part of the fun was trying to figure out, you know, the stage was set up for the opening act. However, if it was, you know, like Zeppelin or Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Carl Palmer's drum set was, you know, massive. It was a machine. And, you know, other bands, you know, you could see their guitars lined up in their guitar stands. That was it. That was another exciting thing was, I wonder where they're going to stand. You know, this is before live albums came out. This is before the internet age. And this was a brand new experience. So standing on the corner across the street from the Performing Arts Center Friday night just passed, I was pleasantly surprised to suddenly hear a lone guitar, you know, cranking out some power chords and playing some Eddie Van Halen inspired riffs. Just how loud those concerts were. It's just, to this day, it's still mind-blowing. You know, once the stadium filled up with people, you had the crowd cheering it, and really the sound would kind of absorb into all of us. But before the bands came on stage, the roadies are checking the amps to make sure they're working or the guitars are hooked up, and they'd play a couple power chords, man, and it seemed like a lightning bolt hit you. So, and then, of course, the anticipation would grow for the concert that you were about to enjoy. I remember the loudest concert only because I was close to the stage in front of the massive wall of speakers was Emerson, Lake & Palmer's famous Welcome Back, My Friends tour, which encompassed 1973, 1974, maybe some parts of 1975, I don't know. But I saw them twice on that tour in 74. And the second time I saw them, I had killer seats. And right in front of Emerson, on the left side, and boy did I pay the price. The next day I could not hear out of my left ear because I was facing Emerson, so I was kind of turned kind of 45 degree angle watching him, but the speakers were directly in front of me. And you know, I don't know how many watts these sound systems were, but they're so loud that just like back to the outdoor stage and the Van Halen group doing a sound check and the guitarist playing a Eddie Van Halen inspired riff. It was so loud. This is just one instrument. It was so loud that my wife and I tried to scream at each other just to have a conversation. And that's exactly how it was back then. This brings me to the topic of today, which is based on an amazing article in the Wall Street Journal. I follow the Wall Street Journal, read the Wall Street Journal for investment advice. I don't agree with the politics of the owners, but the journalism is impeccable. And they cover culture and art and entertainment as well. And not too long ago, especially in their weekend edition, they spend a lot of time doing book reviews, music reviews, interviews, and along comes an interview with pictures. Kind of comes under the heading of what I did during my COVID vacation. This guy, who was a carpenter by trade, his name is Anthony Cossia. Pardon me, my Italian or Greek is not too good. Was inspired to build in 1/6 scale the famous sound system devised by the Grateful Dead in their 1974 concert tour. It was a 28,800 watt system called the Wall of Sound. Now, there might be some deadheads out there. I personally did not love them. I appreciated, of course, we all love some of their hits in the early days, like, you know, Casey Jones, Truckin', and those early suggestive songs. Later on, there was a song of Terrapin Station that was called Estimated Profit, which to this day is one of the most inspiring, amazing songs I've ever heard. Someday it would probably do me good to sit down and either streaming or whatever, listen to the Grateful Dead catalog. Because that's just one song I happened to hear on a progressive radio station back in the 70s before radio got commercial, and that song stuck with me. I bought the album just for that song, and when I need inspiration, I play that song, Estimated Profit. Check it out. It's on their album, Terrapin Station. Of course, they have millions of albums, I'm sure, but they were known for their long, long jams and their long, long concerts. The concerts that never ended. My wife actually attended a Grateful Dead concert because she was invited, and with her best friend's boyfriend was going, and they invited her along, and he invited another friend, and it was crazy, and it was not to her liking. She's more of a Zeppelin fan, but the point of this podcast is just to briefly touch on the sound systems of the concerts of the 1970s, where we were blown away by not only the clarity of sound, but the wattage. And what brought this full circle for me was this article, an interview with this guy who built a replica that actually works 1/6 to scale, 10-foot tall, 13-wide version. And actually made speakers. He said it was kind of like a clock radio, but the sound was better than I could even have imagined. A glorified clock radio, but it sounds better than I thought. 6'8" tall by 10-foot wide creation made of 390 speakers. More than 100 of them are only 23 millimeters wide, and it goes to 800 watts. It cost the guy $2,000 and 200 man hours. He did it in the basement of his home. And an anonymous donor has already offered $100,000 for it. Some have suggested that he rent Airbnb or whatever, rent out his home just so people can see the sound system and listen to it. And the interview goes on, interviewing the roadie from the original crew. It took 15 members 6 hours before each Grateful Dead concert to assemble the real wall of sound. You can Google Grateful Dead wall of sound or wall of sound, because when you think of wall of sound, you can get easily confused with the 60s Phil Spector's wall of sound, which was a studio technique to make the sound fuller. It was used by a lot of the R&B bands. Phil Spector had dozens and dozens of hits with various black artists, R&B, and then of course he ended up with John Lennon in the studio with Imagine. So anyway, that being said, I didn't want to confuse you with, especially those of you out there who know of the term wall of sound. The wall of sound is not to be confused with Phil Spector. This was 1974, the Grateful Dead's touring with this massive sound system. I guess it asked the burning question, why? How did this whole thing get started? He's nuts, said Richard Pechner, a former roadie who had the grueling job of assembling the real wall every show. And I've already told you how long it took to put it up. I mean, look, I absolutely love what he's doing. He's not faking it. He's trying to replicate it. It's a mind blower. Well, why did this guy decide to build a 1974 replica sound system? Well, I guess it starts with he has a love of 70s music and a love of the Dead, the Grateful Dead. And as he puts it, my inspiration was being into the Dead and their constant pursuit of exploring boundaries with no end goal other than just pushing that envelope at all expenses, unquote. It's like the government saying, we're going to send people to Mars. Why? What's the practical purpose? It doesn't matter. We're going to do it, unquote. 500,000 people have seen the project on Facebook. I think you have to subscribe to the Wall Street Journal to look at all the photographs of the replica of it. And there's even a photograph of the original one, which just shows how massive it was. So it started with a love of the Grateful Dead. And he was a carpenter by trade, I believe. And he was locked down with COVID and got this idea in his head that maybe he could do something like this. He said he dipped mini microphones into black paint to mimic the foam wide screens used by Jerry Garcia and Bob Weir. He found himself using a pencil to mock up nails in a plywood stage. He gashed open a thumb while he was building this thing. While watching Netflix with his wife, he would sneak looks at his phone to source stage lights, the Christmas kind. He cut speaker holes, soldered, and forged a river of small wires that spill out of the back of the contraption in into Class D amplifiers. I mean, this is serious here. I mean, you're going to build it, you got to build it right. And then if you're going to not just make it look like the original, it actually has sound too. He spent a lot of time and money on it. And like I said, 24 delivery trucks have visited his home outside New Haven, Connecticut. He's offered the system to Headcount, a nonprofit that registers voters at concerts, and it's already been offered $100,000 to buy it. So, fortunately, my significant other has been supportive, he says. She could have said, "You're crazy." So, anyway, it started with his love of the Grateful Dead. And in a way, I guess you could say he's paying homage to them. Obviously, he has a love for good sound and sound systems. So, it was all for the glory of sound, said Dennis McAnally, who was the Grateful Dead's former publicist who witnessed the 74 wall at the Springfield Civic Center as a University of Massachusetts student. It looked like a giant spaceship. I was gobsmacked, he's quoted as saying, but lugging around the wall of sound was very draining. As you can imagine, it took hours and hours every day just to set up for a, you know, multiple hour, even as long as the Dead played. You had to tear it down, move to the next city, and do the whole process again. It was a monumental effort. I think it wore down the crew, and I think it wore down the band as well. The Dead went on hiatus in 1975. Only to return a year later with a smaller rig. Still, the wall of sound remains a fascination for fans. So, a quarter century after Jerry Garcia's death, the Deadhead, as we know today, is considered mainstream. Got a Deadhead sticker on a Cadillac, famous line from Don Henley, and his solo career. The construction of this mock-up, as we've been talking about, Mr. Garcia, he's 52 years old and the father of two, he represents the more modern Grateful Dead fan. Now, actually cross-reference this guy, and he, in fact, has seen the Grateful Dead, and he saw him so many times, I don't even believe it. It says he saw the Grateful Dead in concert 35 times. And the Jerry Garcia Band, a side group, another 25 times. I seriously doubt that. I don't, even in some of the fan groups I'm in on Facebook, I don't think I've read anybody who's gone to any concert by one artist that many times. I mean, it's not affordable, for one thing, and a time thing. I would be the only band that you would ever see. But anyway, suffice it to say that the guy who constructed this is a Deadhead himself. And he all got going with it when one night him and his wife were watching TV and the obsession began, he said. He just started tinkering in his workshop with wood, and just for fun started building a few speakers together. And then, you know, he thought of the band, the Grateful Dead, and so he just kept going with it. And it just, once I started, I couldn't stop, you know. It just clicked that I had to keep going, he says. I kept working my way on, through it, and it just got bigger. and bigger and bigger. His Facebook page garnered more and more likes, and it just took off until he just, as he put, you lose yourself in it. So with all of this obsession, you might wonder what the missus thinks about all this. His wife is a psychotherapist who never attended a Grateful Dead show, which is interesting. This must have been before he was married, for sure. She says she understands the emotional impact of the project that her husband has done on people, but she passes on trying to explain her husband's obsession, claiming, I'm off the clock. Great read, Wall Street Journal from a couple weeks ago, or you can Google the Wall of Sound Grateful Dead mock-up, and it'll lead to some photographs and a story about this guy. I loved reading the story, and the photographs that go with the story are even, you know, make it come to life. It's real. It's amazing. It's cool. There's something to be said for this kind of unique kind of passion. In my personal experience, you know, like I said, it was always really exciting to see what the stage looked like when you came into the arena to see a concert, whoever it was. And for me, I don't really have a memory of the sound systems exactly, except for what I mentioned earlier, the Emerson, Lake & Palmer Welcome Back My Friends tour. The speakers were kind of giant and blue, and one thing I didn't mention is the concert was in quad. First concert I went to that was in quad. So you had four channels, left and right on the front of the stage, left and right in the back of the arena, and the sound went all over the place. It was unbelievable. And it was just an unforgettable tour. And to this day, I would say that the Welcome Back, My Friends, to the Show That Never Ends, which became the Emerson, Lake & Palmer live album after brain salad surgery, was the greatest sounding concert I ever went to. So today we salute the sound systems. I've talked about the sound systems all the way back to Woodstock, which is a fascination. Maybe we'll talk about the father of the modern concert sound, which really was coming together in the late 60s as more and more bands went, the folk music went electric. There was a big turning point in 69 and 70, moving into the new decade of the 1970s with sound systems at rock concerts. So, hope you enjoyed this little take on sound systems and concerts and my memories of being a part of that growing up. All triggered by this amazing article in the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago about a guy's love for a band, remembering a time that he really wasn't quite old enough to see himself until the band had peaked, meaning the Grateful Dead, and on his own built a 1/6 size mock-up of the famous Grateful Dead Wall of Sound that they personally had made for their 1974 concert tours. Goodbye, everybody.
That's it for this episode. Thanks for listening to Full Circle Analog, where we connect with the Inland Empire's musical roots. If you really enjoyed this podcast and like to find out when our next episodes go live, we upload every Wednesday. And to get direct links to those episodes, go ahead and follow us at Full Circle Analog on Facebook. You can find us at fb.me/FCAnalog to get there quickly. Or you can find us at odnws.com/podcast. It's our official website, and that page has a link to our podcast on basically any platform you can find it on, as well as players for our most popular platforms. Thanks for listening, and check us out next week on Full Circle Analog.